We're doing in Yaakov, we're holding the bottom of page Lamed Tes Amud Beis in the standard editions, which is Peches in the Talmud, and you guys have the copies that say page Mem on the top left. We'll get there in five words. Ha'hu Tzeduke, there was a Sadducee. Dechaze le'rava dekame'ayin b'shmaita, now we're on your page. He saw the sage Rava, who was learning. He was me'ayin, he was deep in thought over what he was learning. Ve'yatva etzbe'ata didei, and his finger was placed tutei kare, under his foot. So he was standing on his fingers as he was crouched over in thought. And ve'kamaitz behu, and he was applying so much pressure on his fingers, and he was so focused on his learning, he didn't notice it. Ve'kamevan etzbate dama, that his fingers were bleeding from the pressure of his own legs on his fingers, and he was so focused on his learning that he didn't notice it. So Rava's sitting there in intense thought. He's so focused, he doesn't even realize he's wounding himself as he's standing there learning. His fingers are under his feet. Maybe it was cold. He put his fingers under his feet, and then he didn't notice that he shifted his weight. And as he's causing his own fingers to bleed, he's so focused on his learning, he doesn't even realize it. Wow. And that's focus. That's focus. And when we read about Namoraim and their great minds, we have to remind ourselves this story, what it means to be focused. You know, by us, if the air conditioner is on, isn't on, if too many minutes have passed since my last coffee, if maybe I want to just check my SMSs, our focus is gone. And part of the keys to success is focus. They keep researching. There are books coming out all the time on what's the secret of successful people. And one of the major secrets is the ability to focus on one thing. Not to be distracted. We call it multitasking. Successful people call it distractions. Can you focus on one thing and do it well? And here we see the greatness of Rava, who focused to the umpteenth degree. We have to try to do that. I have a piece of paper when I'm learning. I'll get to you in a minute. I have a piece of paper when I'm learning because I see my mind gets distracted. So anytime I think, ooh, I have to call so-and-so, I still have to deal with that, I jot it down, and then I get back to what I'm learning. So that way it doesn't keep distracting me. It's like a little fly. I put it down. Leave me alone. I'll get back to you. But one of the keys to understanding and retaining learning is focus. Focus. And it could get us very far. We have the potential to read very quickly and understand very quickly if we'll focus. I once had a chavrusa, the husband of my cousin. So we're not really related, related through marriage. So he calls me up one day and he says, you know, I'm looking for work and I'm not finding it. I said, okay, no, I didn't know. So he says to me, so let's have a chavrusa. I said, what do you mean? He said, I'll come to your yeshiva. We'll learn for 45 minutes a day. You'll see that once I decide to start learning the HR, we'll make sure I get a job. Okay? He shows up to yeshiva the first day, gets a call, he got a job. It is now 18 years later, he's still at the same job. But we kept up the chavrusa. And when he would come in, he wasn't coming to learn in yeshiva, you know, for hours. He would take the Gemara and start flying down the page. And I'd go, give me a second, wait. And he'd go, you didn't get it yet? And I'd say, not exactly. And he'd read as fast as he could read. And we went through tractate after tractate. Now after the fourth or fifth time we were learning together, I started realizing I could really understand at this pace. I never thought I could. But he didn't have patience. He was flying through the material. We'd finish about a daf in the 45 minutes. And it was usually a daf I never learned before. It was insightful to me how much, if you're focused, if you realize you have to move, you can cover. That's one of the tricks to speed reading. You take a page on top of the, you take a white page, you put it over the text, and you start going down, forcing your eyes to move at a certain pace. And then you could force yourself to read and understand. It's a major component is focus. How focused am I? Will very often define both the quantity and the quality of memory I have. with what I'm learning. So Rava was focused. You know, the rabbis used to tie their shoes on Sunday and they wouldn't untie them till the end of the week. Because who can break their concentration and untie shoes? The Talmud later on, as we six chapters down in Tractate Shabbos, when it discusses knots, we'll discuss the knot of a rabbi's shoes. Is that considered a knot of permanence? Because he doesn't undo it until the end of the week. They wouldn't undo their sandals. You want to break your concentration? Aren't you in the middle of learning? So we have to remember they were learning by heart. They didn't have a text in front of them. And they had to juggle all the information when the Gemara asks, but here it says this, and there it says that, and maybe we should understand this way, and that way. They were doing all of this by heart. So that requires a lot of focus. I recommend, my 8th grade Rebbe recommended to us, learn one page of Talmud by heart. And that way when you're standing at a bus stop, you could at least review that page of Talmud. One page. And when you review it, you suddenly realize, wait, did this mean this way or that way? Does it say it this way or that way? Try it, guys. Learn one page of Talmud by heart. You're learning now at a relatively slow pace, right, in your Talmud class. You do about a page in a month or 2 months or more.
You're right. You're
saying you could learn it by heart, and then suddenly you have a page of Talmud you can review. You could know. You could master. It could be yours. Coming back to our Gemara. So we have to discuss a little bit who these Sadducees were and who Rava was. But let's finish the story, and then we'll take questions and analyze what's really going on here. So this Sadducee is watching Rava learning, as Rava is wounding himself unintentionally. Amarle, so he says to Rava, he didn't mind distracting him, it seems, Ama Paziza, what a swift nation you are. You're so quick to make mistakes. The Kadmitu Pumaichu Lud Naichu, you let your mouth get ahead of your ears. Akati Beparzutaichu Kamaitu. And you guys are still that same nation who doesn't think before they act. You're acting too quickly, you see? You quickly went into your learning. You didn't pay attention. You put your hands in a place where you're ultimately wounding yourself. Bereisha, initially, ibaya lechu, what you should have done is, lemishma imatzitu kablitu vilo lo kablitu. You should have initially listened to what God had to offer and then decided, do we want the Torah or not? You didn't do that. You said, Nase v'nishma, we're ready, open check. Whatever you say, God, we're ready to perform. Nase, we'll do v'nishma, and later on you'll tell us what you had in mind. So until this line, the Talmud's been telling us the last few weeks how wonderful the Jewish people are that they were willing to accept whatever Hashem says without conditions. They said, we'll do whatever you say, you'll tell us the details later. So that was what the line of reasoning of the Talmud for the last few pages. Now, the Talmud's telling us the Sadducee is mocking us for it. He's saying, where's the intelligence? Why are you agreeing to something you don't know what you're agreeing to? Amale. So Rava answered him. Interesting. I don't know why he didn't tell him, Nudnik, leave me alone, I'm in the middle of learning. He didn't say that. I don't know why. He said, Anan disaginan bishlemuta. We who have a lot of peace, that we work with God in a whole way. We're willing to give our trust. We're willing to give our love. We're willing to rely on Him. We don't have to check out everything. What's God thinking? So then, Ketiv Ban, the verse says about us, Tumat Yesharim Tanchim. The wholeness of those who are straight guides them. Part of what causes us not to trust others is because we ourselves are twisted. The more straight a person is, the more they're willing to be trusting. The more conniving a person himself is, the less trusting he is of others. Pharaoh never lives up to his word. He also doesn't trust Hashem. Because he himself, lo ta'aminu, people don't have faith, ki lo ta'aminu, because they cannot be trusted. When a person himself can be trusted, then they're more capable of giving trust to others. It's a two-way street. Everyone knows you could get burnt by giving trust. It's the part of life. No one's saying you should be stupid. We know that when we give trust, there's a certain risk involved. And the question is, can we give that trust? So some people can never give trust. And that's because of who they are. It's not because of who other people are. Everyone gets burnt. I was robbed by a guy who was two doors down from me. I knew the guy. He knew me. I helped the guy, and then he came and stole my passport. I think I had the day I had to fly, I suddenly discovered my passport was gone. And then I discovered he was part of a ring that forged identity theft and all kinds of wonderful things, and the police wanted to blame me, like I was in it with him. Okay, so now I'm never going to trust people again? Okay, so you know, people do things that are wrong. Does that mean everyone does things that are wrong? Maybe we have to be smart. I'm saying there's a balance. You have to realize that at the end of the day, if you don't trust people, you lose. You don't only gain. It's two sides to the coin. So Rava tells him, we are straight, we are loving, we are those who are connected to Hashem, we're willing to put our trust there. When you get married, it's a very scary thing. If you don't have any assets to your name, if you don't think you don't have any goals in life, it's okay, you can get married, why not? What you got to lose? But if you have something to lose and you have goals and Be'ezat Hashem you will develop in your life and you want to build a family and suddenly your whole future is contingent on this other person. And what happens if they turn on you? And what happens if they end up being not who you thought they'd be? There's always risk. And at the end of the day, in order to connect, you have to give trust. Okay, sometimes you can figure out what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. There's a difference between a first marriage and a second marriage. But the general rule is, you can't dive off the diving board and leave one leg on the diving board. You're not going to succeed. That's how people get hurt. We went into a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. We said, we trust you. We're going straight forward with it. And again, depending on how much is at stake, will also define how much trust we should give. But we have to be able to give trust. We'll just finish the line. Rava tells him, Hanach inshe, but those people, he's saying, you guys, disagin ba'aliluta, that you guys are conniving in the way you behave. You guys aren't trusted people. K'tiv behu. So about people like you, Rava tells him, it says, V'selef bogedim yeshodim. The twistedness of people who are traitors ultimately destroys themselves. When people are dishonest, so then they are ultimately their own destruction. And this is a recurring theme in life, but people don't see it. In Tanakh, we are repeatedly taught that being twisted doesn't win people anything. So we see it where the brothers will sell Yosef, and they have claims against him which are wrong, and ultimately they lose by it. They don't win. I didn't hear you. So that's a machlokas. The Ibn Ezra really says that when Yaakov tricked his father, if you look at the Ibn Ezra and the Rashbam, so they say that Yaakov's real blessings in life came from the blessings that Yaakov received from his father at the end when he was departing. But the blessings he received with a misconception, if we want to go that route, so then those blessings did not benefit him in life. We ordinarily understand it the way the Ran says, that the blessings were really God's blessings. Yitzchak was just the vehicle. And God wasn't tricked. God knew it was Yaakov there. So that's why the blessings worked. But well, that's
Yaakov's idea either, right?
I mean, right?
He would have had to go against
Rivka said, I likil latcha b'ni, the Targum says, Rivka said to him, I have a prophecy. This is the way it's supposed to play itself out. But if I didn't go with that, if I went with Pshat, then I would say that Yaakov paid the ultimate price. When Yaakov was willing to trick his father, then his wives learned from him, as the Midrash said, and tricked him. And then I would take it a step further, which it does not say in the Midrash, and that maybe that's what his children relied on when they tricked him and sold Yosef and told him he was dead. I wonder if they didn't say, Dad, we learned from you. You were willing to trick your father when you thought he misunderstood reality. So we thought you misunderstood reality. We just want in your footsteps. I wonder, again, I don't have a medrash that supports this idea. But it's my own thought. I wonder if Yaakov didn't pay a very heavy price for it in the end. I don't know. But now let's go in order. There's a lot to discuss on this Gemara. But yes, Benny.
Kind of a while back that you were like, maybe Rava's hands were cold.
I was suggesting why he would put his hands under his feet to begin with.
Because, I mean, if he didn't notice that they were bleeding, he probably wouldn't notice that they were cold.
When he started learning, maybe, they were cold. That's when people sometimes put their hands under their feet. If their hands are cold.
Their legs or their...
I'm not sure what position he was in. It sounds pretty funny to be crouched all the way with your feet under your legs. And the bottom of people's legs are tame. You can't be thinking in Torah when your hands are touching the bottom of your legs. That's why I thought perhaps what it means is a position like this, where it was under his lap. But in some way, the positioning ultimately caused him to bleed. That's what I imagine, that he was wearing a garment, he was wearing a robe, he put his hands under his lap. When it says under his legs, I assume that's what it means. It says tute kare, under his legs. But kare very often is the upper part of the leg. It's the lap. So I'm imagining that that's what's going on. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly. I'm not sure. Not sure the position.
Position that he that was comfortable with.
Or maybe kriya, and he put under his knees. He was on his knees and he put under his knees.
Maybe. Wow. Maybe, but remember, he was sitting there learning this way, thinking this way. So it had to be conducive to that. So I'm not sure. Yeah.
The example of massive nishma is, to me, I mean, it doesn't. It's a great thing, but it's not like a blind trust. Hashem is already. Done so much from Israel, you know, taking them out of Egypt, shown the plagues. So, at that point, you know, I mean, it's chutzpahdik because the Midrash says that most of them even seen all that didn't even leave Egypt. So there is something to the idea, but it's not that you're taking a trust without a lot of good reason why you could do that. I mean, you know, if your father says, listen, promise me you'll do something after showing you time and again how much he cares for you and has done for you, first of all, by saying it, as we know, you only need the intent to do it. Not everybody actually follows it up, unfortunately, you know, with Hashem. You know, so, I don't know, there's certain things that are the paragon of the paradigm of seemingly faith or trust that to me seem also to be quite logical. Even Abraham with the Akedah, it wasn't like just somebody came up with a voice and said, offer me your son. It's, I admit your wife pregnant at 99, beyond nature, all these miracles, and we'll make him look like you, and we'll have, you know, I'll make promise you a great nation. So Abraham is saying, look, even if I sacrifice my son, he's still going to give me a great nation in some way, and I'm not going to have any other kids, so I don't really understand it all, and it's enough to make me crazy. But it isn't the same as coming, you know, with really very little to go on and to say, I'll do it all. You know, just there are examples that I think you can make a logical case why this is a smart, good move to make, and it takes courage, but it makes sense.
I have an ongoing machlokas with an educator down the block. He has a yeshiva right near Tachana Merkazit. And he says, you have to teach students on the highest level and give them everything you got. And I say, help students work out from where they're holding to the next step. And just because you have a lot to say doesn't mean they should be hearing it now. They'll get there. So now I'm at odds with myself listening to you. The easiest thing for me to say is 100%, let's go on. But I have a lot to say. and I think in the long run, it might be very good for you guys. So I'm going to ask you, do you want to take the remaining 5 minutes of class to discuss that a little bit more at length? Yes? Okay, but now we're going to like advanced. Say that. I agree with everything that was said. The Jewish people definitely were given a lot of blessings and a lot of indications of how Hashem masters nature. There is a core hardship in all of life as any Jew. And that hardship is that Hashem is not forecastable. We are not given a system that says, if you do A, B will happen. And if you only play by the rules, then you will look back at life and say, that was perfect, that was great. You definitely cannot do it during life, and you many times will not be able to do it at the end of your life either. When a person passes, then they're given a clarity as to why things work. So then you're faced with a challenge. Hashem showed you a lot of good things. Hashem also killed 5 out of every person's family. Hashem also killed 75-85% of every person's family. So coming out of Egypt and saying Nasev and Ishma and saying, well, we were given all these miracles, the Rishonim right. The first thing Hashem promises us when we come out of Mitzrayim, we come to Mara, the waters are bitter, and Hashem cures them and says, don't worry, everything you saw in Egypt, I won't do to you. I am Hashem, your healer. Say many Rishonim, many of the commentaries on the spot. The Jewish people came out of Mitzrayim and they said, Hashem is a very zealous God. We're coming under Hashem and all we've seen Him do is punish. All we've seen Him do is hurt the Egyptians. So now His focus is on us and we're His people. And Hashem says, I am your healer. I will not punish you like I did the Egyptians. It's not the way you think. But what this shows us is how far we are. Even after attaining the prophecy at the splitting of the sea, we're still very far from having a handle on the ways of Hashem. Hashem says in the Navi Yeshaya, Lo darchechem derechai. I don't think the way you think. I don't act the way you act. So on the one end, the Jewish people have a tremendous love and willingness to connect, an interest in connecting, and willingness to dedicate themselves. I'll do it. On the other end, to say that coming out of Mitzrayim, it was an obvious thing to do. It was an easy thing to do. I think we have to be realistic. If you can imagine that the average person buried their siblings, maybe some of their children, people had their own children dying under them. And that's what we learned, that the first book Moshe Rabbeinu composes is the book of Job. The people came out of Mitzrayim, they had a lot of questions about why they had to suffer all those years. It wasn't only, great, Rabbon Shalom, you did this for us, everything's wonderful. They came out of Mitzrayim and they had philosophical questions. And aside from the Tanakh, aside from the Torah, which Moshe gave us over time, Moshe also gave them a tool, the book of Job, to deal with all their pain and suffering, which is a book they studied for 40 years. So I would have maybe been better to you as an educator, not bringing all of this up, but I believe in the long run, you will have to live life. And when people walk into Judaism and they expect, I'm going to do everything right, so everything will play itself out perfectly for me. It's just going to be good. Good people get good things. Well, we suddenly discover in life that it doesn't, we don't have a formula. We were given a formula, this is the way to live life. It is definitely the best way to live life on this planet. But does that mean that things will be fun all along? I think the message of the Akedah that you brought up is that it wasn't that, like in the book of Job, that suddenly lightning struck the house and his kids were all killed by an army that swooped in and killed them. He was told, Hashem's telling him, now you do it. There was no way to understand it any other way than Hashem saying, I want Yitzchak dead, and I want you to be the facilitator of that happening. And when you look at that, it's a very shocking thing, and you see that Avraham Avinu had no understanding of why Hashem was telling him this. He looked at it and said, if this is what you want, I will do whatever you want. You're the boss. I'm saying it's coming to drive home a certain point about the lack of predictability. The fact that we live in a world where to say Nasev and Nishma, the Sadducees' argument, we have to focus. We'll start with that next week. What was he saying and what was Rava answering him? What's at the key of what's going on here? Why does Rava have to tell him we're straight people, we're willing to love, we're willing to accept? And the point here, in a nutshell, is that you reach a point where you have to say it's been proven to the point which is satisfactory, and from here I'm willing to dedicate myself to this. This is what's right. To say that I have all the answers, you have to be stupid. There's no way you'll have all the answers. You will get more answers as time goes on, and you'll get more sophisticated with your questions as time goes on. If you stop thinking, you'll have all the answers. The only way to have all the answers is to stop thinking. If you continue thinking, then you'll continue questioning, you'll get better answers, and then you'll learn better questions too. So if Moshe Rabbeinu could be standing at the closest moment to the Ribbono Shel'Olam and say, Ribbono Shel'Olam, I want more clarity, that means at the highest level, you want more clarity. And if Hashem's answer is, there's only so much clarity a living person can get, that means there are certain questions you have to be willing to live with. But that doesn't mean I can have questions that don't allow me to connect to Hashem. I have to get answers to the point where I have a basis. I am satisfied to the point where, yes, I can take that step forward. Now, in marriage, there's a lot of emotion involved. But there also has to be logic. Sure, there's emotion. Sure, we imagine, and hopefully we're right, that our happiness and our life is going to be built with this person. But logically, you tell yourself, I haven't proven it beyond a doubt. There's no way to prove it beyond a doubt. I've worked it out logically to the point where it's satisfactory. Where I've reached, I have enough information that it makes sense to make this move. But I'm still going to make a move. The same thing here. I have to reach a point where it's satisfactory. I have enough understanding. I have enough answers that I can make a move. But at the end of the day, I have to make a choice. And part of that choice is how straight, how honest, how loving I can be. And those three go hand in hand. True love is the ability to give. And that stems from the ability to be honest, to be straight. The more straight we are, the more humble we are, the more we're willing to admit what we didn't really do and how much the other did do for us and how much they're valuable for us. The more arrogant a person is, the less they're willing to admit their limitations, the less they're able to see good in others, the less they can love others because they don't see what others have done for them because there's this misconception of how much I'm worth and how much I did and how much you did for me. So all of these go hand in hand, and that's part of what Rav is answering him. He's telling him, you guys are dishonest. We are honest, so we're able to love, and we're able to see what Hashem did do for us. Do we have all the answers? No. Can I understand what Am Yisrael did? I'm not sure. And that's what I tell the Gerim here often, and I don't know if you guys believe me. If I weren't born Jewish, would I have the integrity, the honesty, the ability to make the move of conversion? I don't know. I'd like to think I would. I don't know. Thank God I didn't have to make that choice. It's not an easy choice. It's much easier if I would sit here and say, it all makes sense, things will be good for you, don't worry. But if I have to talk about a world to come, and I have to say, look, this is right, and this is good, but it doesn't mean it will always be fun or pleasant or that the system always makes sense to us. You have to have answers to the point where, yes, it makes sense, I'm going to make the move. But do I have answers to the point where everything that happens to me will make sense to me? No. One of the responsibilities in life is to be able to discern and say, I had enough answers that this is true. And the fact that right now it's difficult and I have problems dealing with it, that won't undo the fact that I did have good answers still here. And those answers are not shaken by this. Ah, it's not fun? So that's the big challenge. And I think, again, our perspective of Am Yisrael coming out of Mitzrayim, in a realistic sense, they were people who were tortured, tormented, and maimed. As the Midrash says, they came out of Mitzrayim missing arms and legs and eyes. The people of Egypt, coming out of Egypt, you had a Jewish people who were maimed. They were crippled. They were wounded. They were uneducated. They had real problems. And they're coming to receive the Torah, and they lost their family members. Now you look at it and you say, wow, these are pretty amazing people, what Chazal call the exceptional generation. We're out of time.